Welcome to Lumen Conferencing. Please enter your passcode followed by the pound or hash key, and I'll connect you. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the fourth person to join the meeting.
Yes, that would be.
Volume down.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dr. Campbell. We're just about ready to call the meeting to order. Need to make sure who we have on the line. So actually, let me go ahead and call the meeting to order of the Arizona State Board of Podiatry Examiners on September the 8th. Year 2021, and it is currently 8:32 a.m. Here present in the conference room is myself, Dr. Campbell, Chair, Seamus Monahan, our AAG, and Boaz Alvarado, our Executive Director. Do we have Dr. Yolano on the phone?
Yes. Dr. Yolano.
Dr. Foreman, are you present?
Good morning. This is Dr. Foreman.
And Dr. Polakoff, are you there?
Present.
Thank you. And do we have the complainant for the investigation file where her initials are BR, I believe? Are you present, ma'am?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And just we always remember, too, with we refer to you with your initials but not by your name. So it sounds like everybody is present. Mr. Crawford is here in the boardroom or the conference room also representing Dr. Clark, but Dr. Clark had car issue this morning, so we will be kind of changing our schedule a little bit here to fit things in. So when he comes on, he will let us know that he is present. So that's always my statement that I'm going to read here just a second. Got so much stuff here. All right. Please be advised that this is a professional administrative meeting. All board members will conduct themselves in a professional manner, and it is expected that all other participants will conduct themselves in a professional manner. Combativeness, rudeness, or verbal aggression is not tolerated. And such behavior occurs, the board chair reserves the right to limit who may address the board. The board strives to conduct its meetings with the utmost respect and process for those who are in attendance. I also, before we move on in the agenda, I have some general comments that I think need to be addressed because of some different things that have been occurring lately here at the board. Again, it's always the responsibility of all parties involved in these meetings to be prepared. That's from all our board members, complainants, doctors, and investigators. When a doctor receives a summons that there's been a complaint and a subpoena for records, that means sending in the whole chart. That does not mean you can handpick what you're sending in. You should know your chart inside and out when you come to the board. And you should take the board complaint seriously. We know we're all busy, and the excuse of being busy and for not participating in the meeting can present and cause a lot of problems down the line. So when you don't participate, it draws out the process, delays the adjudication of complaints. When we only hear one side of the story, we can't make a proper assessment. So we need to be able to ask questions of all the parties. And when you are physicians and anybody participating, to speak slowly and clearly, because with all this telephonic participation, sometimes people talk so fast that it's difficult to catch everything they say. When you appear at this board, you should dress respectfully. This is a process, that needs to be shown respect. I know a lot of people wear scrubs at the office, but coming to a board meeting in your scrubs, I feel, is disrespectful to this board and the process. It's easy enough when you go back to your office, you can change into scrubs, but come to this board looking like a professional. People on the licensees, no deals are made with individual board members. It's inappropriate to call separate board members to discuss issues. If you want to discuss an issue with the board, you can come to the board, put on the agenda, you can speak and call to the public. When you call and a board member wants to talk about a licensee or a problem, that puts, the board member should not respond to you, number one. If you have questions, you can ask the executive director, and then it goes through that route. But no board member should engage in a conversation if any issue, because if any issue with that conversation comes before the board, you're jeopardizing the situation, and the board member must recuse themselves from that discussion, which in turn could also affect quorum, and so an issue might not possibly get to be voted on. Licensees should be familiar with state statutes and rules. You know, we don't give that license, that exam anymore in state statutes because it should be upon the onus of the physician to be aware of those state statutes. When a physician is ordered to complete CME for disciplinary or non-disciplinary orders, it is the responsibility of that physician to seek out the continuing education credits, present that to the board for board approval. The board does not do that for you. That is your responsibility to present those to the board for review to make sure that that fits the order you've been given. Remember, this is a regulatory board, not an advisory board. So if there are questions, business questions, etc., kindly speak to your business attorney or your malpractice company. But those, again, we don't advise on those topics. And the last point I'd like to make, this is a one-person board, one staff member. And Bo is new to the board and is getting his feet wet and working through things here. So please remember, don't barrage the board office with phone calls every day, all, you know, multiple times a week, because you're taking him away from his work when he could be dealing with an issue that you might be having, and continually bothering him on the phone slows the process down. Plus, he has other meetings related to his position here as the executive director, other meetings that occur here around the Capitol, such as meetings with other board executive directors. So I'd appreciate some courtesy to the board's executive director. He will respond in a timely fashion. And if he's having issues, I'm sure he will correspond with you to let you know such. So those are just some things that I wanted to bring out in the open, because I think there are some things that get a little abused and people need to be aware. Thank you very much for indulging me. Number three, we're moving on. Does anyone have a declaration of a conflict of interest on any item on this agenda today? Right, hearing none, we'll move on. Is Dr. Andrews available? Not responding. Okay, we've had, a little change in schedule here. So I'm just going to move on here to the review of our minutes from August the 11th, 2021. Those are just the general session minutes. Does anyone have any concerns with those minutes? Alrighty. The only item that is on here that will be needing correction is in regards to the motion from Dr. Olson that we moved him to the informal interview. the proper numbers will be directed on that order, and we don't need to go through that all right now. We'll just give Bo the update so that he can correct that into the minutes. So if no one else has any concerns about the minutes, I will, or comments about those minutes, I will go ahead and make a motion to accept the general session meeting minutes from August the 11th, 2021, with corrections given to Bo. And I have a second, Dr. Foreman?
Yes.
Thank you. Any discussion on that point? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All righty. All right, now we can move on here to, we'll go under subheading 5 here. We're moving past the investigation files since the doctor's not yet present, so we'll move on to the issuance of licenses. We have 5 doctors here on our agenda. The first is Dr. Angela Zhang. She has applied through universal recognition. Fees are paid. Her license is substantially complete. Does anyone have any concerns or questions regarding this doctor's application? Okay, hearing none, and I will make a motion to approve Dr. Zhang's application for licensure through universal recognition. Application's complete, all criteria are met, and to issue this license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next here on the agenda is Dr. Michael Hamm. A second. Dr. Hamm applied for a temporary license, which was granted because of some work timing issues. He has also then applied through for his permanent license through the universal licensing recognition route, and that has is all completed and fees are paid. Does anyone have any questions or concerns on this applicant? Hearing none, I will make a motion to approve Dr. Hamm's initial application for licensure through universal recognition. As the application is complete, all criteria are met, and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All right. Diana Perry is our next applicant here. Dr. Perry had applied also for a temporary license for work reasons and has applied also now for her regular initial, for the initial application of a regular podiatric license. It is administratively complete. Fees are paid. Does anyone have any concerns with this application or questions? Hearing none, I will make a motion to approve Dr. Perry's initial application for licensure as it is complete and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Our next is Dr. Ryan Pinedo, I believe is how I would pronounce his name. Dr. Pinedo applied for a regular license. Fees are paid. The application is complete. Does anyone have questions or concerns on this application? Hearing none, I will make a motion to approve Dr. Pinedo's application for initial licensure. The application is complete, and to issue this license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next is Dr. Chai Kolang. He goes by, I think, Mark. So, but Dr. Ko has applied also for a regular license. I do have a question for Bo. Did the doctor, he did indicate back to you when he passed part three of the national boards? Because he, yeah, he left, he didn't put the date that he had. Oh, okay. Okay, all right, perfect. So does anyone have any other comments, questions, or concerns on this applicant? Okay. Hearing none, I will make a motion to approve Dr. Ko's initial application for licensure as it's complete and to issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. I heard somebody chime in. Who came in on the call? Okay.
Seth Clark.
Oh, hello, Dr. Clark. Okay, thank you so much. So, since Dr. Clark is here, and I think it's probably judicious if we do go that direction, and then if Dr. Andrews responded back, or we're just going to probably stay with him at 9:30 as originally done. Okay. Okay, sounds like a plan. All righty, so we're going to go back here to the 5A, which is the investigation files for complaint number 21-03-6, Dr. Seth Clark. Dr. Clark is available on the phone. We also have complainant on the phone, and Dr. Polakoff is the investigator, and Mr. Crawford, counsel for Dr. Clark, is present here at the meeting. So if you just give me just a second here. Dr. Polakoff, ma'am, would you please present your investigation report?
Yes, ma'am. This is Dr. Dietrich Polakoff reporting on 2103 Seth Clark, PM. Dr. Campbell, there appears to be a little bit of a back, a delay in what I'm hearing on your screen. Do you want me to continue?
Okay, yeah. So please, everyone who's participating on the call, if you would mute your phones while Dr. Polakoff is speaking, and then when we ask for remarks, then please, you can turn your phone speaker back on.
Thank you. The complainant submitted a report to the state. The complainant is RB against Dr. Seth Clark for concerns of her multiple foot surgeries, the necessity for the surgeries, and the complications that she has had and is seeking further reparative treatment for the sequela of the surgeries. Allegation number one, the surgical course following implant rejection for patient RB had concerns of post-operative care, concerns with the surgical interventions, and surgical plans for the patient. Allegation number one was substantiated by this reviewer. In review of all the submitted records, questions arose as to the extensive surgeries planned for mild symptoms. An example is on the date of 3/02/20. I have included the entire dictation for completeness. 3/02/20. Positive warmth, positive pain, first MPJ proximal to incision, sharp pain, doing PT, x-rays show hardware implant without complications. There is pain to palpation of the left plantar heel and tenderness extending into the arch. There is decreased ankle joint dorsiflexion bilaterally. Pain at first MTPJ with swelling in the joint area. No warmness to the area. Transilluminates like a ganglion cyst. Discussed possibility of getting an MRI to confirm presence of bone marrow lesions or stress fracture of calcaneus. Discussed what a BML stress fracture is and options to treat it. Discussed that TT syndrome is normally a clinical diagnosis based on symptoms which the patient has.
Dr. Polakoff, are you still there? Dr. Leonardo, are you there? Or Dr. Foreman? Yeah, this is, and it's always in this room. That other room is. Be live.
Welcome to Lumen Conferencing. Please enter your passcode followed by the pound or hash key, and I'll connect you. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the sixth person to join the meeting.
Scaffolding with an amniotic fluid.
Pardon me, Dr. Polakoff, this is Dr. Campbell. We lost everybody, so I need you to go back to, I believe, the portion you had just really basically started your report. You were reading about all the issues, the ganglion cyst, and talking about all the other issues with the heel examination, et cetera?
Yes, Dr. Campbell. I'll go back to that point.
Dr. Yolano and Dr. Foreman, are you there? And Dr. Clark and the complainant, or is everybody here?
Yeah, Dr. Foreman is here.
I'm here. Okay. Dr. Yolano is here.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, Dr. Polakoff. Please go.
No problem. I'm reviewing the allegation number one, which I have substantiated, and reviewing a dictation from 3-2 of 20, which discussed the possible surgeries for this patient, including the plantar fasciotomy for plantar fasciitis, gastroc recession, given equinus deformity, and given that Dr. Clark states that his research showing the efficacy in this procedure and treatment of plantar fasciitis and preventing reoccurrence, endoscopic tarsal tunnel decompression to be performed given a positive tenels of the tibial nerve and possibility for Baxter's neuritis as well, Z-plasty to be performed at tarsal tunnel incision due to my own previous past experience of needing to lengthen the skin at that incision site to ensure the nerves stay decompressed, calcaneus with no obvious displaced fracture, but stress fracture and or bone marrow lesion suspected and visualized on MRI images. Therefore, treatment of that will require a fluoroscopy-guided needle placement, subsequent treatment with either a calcium phosphate scaffolding or with an amniotic fluid. It is Dr. Clark's experience that all of these procedures, when performed in tandem with each other, give the best chance to get long-term relief from symptoms. At that visit, also, a prescription was given for clindamycin. For symptoms that were reported in his dictation as mild, the surgical plan and execution were excessive. Continuing through the medical records, the patient underwent four separate surgeries on the left foot. Complications arose with the implant fluid accumulation from possible implant itself or trauma of the surgery. The condensed record is will be discussed with me now. During the first review of the records, the financial records were not complete. Dr. Clark was notified. He tried to get the records, and he left this office location to a new office and had difficulty in obtaining the records. We had limited financial records to review, and the patient was kind enough to contact her insurance, so we do have her financial records of bills submitted by Dr. Clark. On 8-23-13, another surgery was performed at the Biltmore Surgical Center of hallux rigidus left, other hammer toes left, subluxation of tarsal joint, hallux rigidus right, other hammer toes right, Achilles tendonitis right, contracture left foot, crossover toe right, crossover toe left, hallux valgus right, hallux valgus left. The reason I added this is to show that the patient did have previous surgery by Dr. Clark on her left foot, which ended in a good result. But unfortunately, on her right foot, which ended with a good result. But unfortunately, on the left foot, she had to undergo 4 extensive surgeries and had the implant put in, put out, rinsed with betadine, and placed back in several times. This reviewer does not understand the use of the same implant rinsed with betadine when the patient has an allergy to seafood. The summary of this is concerns about excessive surgery, concerns about the way the implant was handled, concerns about improper, lacking medical records that would have answered a lot of questions if the medical records were just complete, and billing concerns for the surgeries that were performed on this patient. The patient did go to a new doctor, which has removed the implant, formed some surgical advanced procedures that has tried to help the patient, but the patient has not been made whole. Thank you, Dr. Campbell. That is my review.
Thank you. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ulano, do you have any questions for Dr. Polakoff at this time?
I have a question. This is Dr. Foreman. Dr. Polakoff, did Dr. Clark offer to remove the implant and fuse the bone?
I do not recall that.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Dr. Ulano, do you have any questions?
Yeah, with the other surgeries that Dr. Clark planned, do you feel that was appropriate, such as the tendo Achilles lengthening and the ankle stabilization that he planned?
It is very hard to make a comment. I'll just give you my opinion. It's very hard to make a comment on that just because Dr. Clark saw the patient. He planned the surgery after seeing the patient. But the problem is, never in the notes does he say Achilles tendon is limited by 5 degrees, 4 degrees, 2 degrees. The patient is walking with a limp. There's Aquinas in gait observation. The medical records are so lacking that by just his notes and his suggestion of surgery, it is extremely excessive from the notes given. By saying that the patient needs injection of the calcium phosphatase or amniotic fluids planned and for to help in scaffolding due to the results of an MRI showing edema in the bone, and the patient has no symptoms, he is treating something that is not of concern with the patient at this time because the patient was more concerned of the pain to the first MPJ, the inflammation, the difficulty in moving and difficulty in walking. If his records were more complete, it would be so easy to answer this question. It would be so understandable why Dr. Clark would have said the patient needs five procedures instead of one procedure. So at this time, it is hard to really verbalize anything on this patient. And the problem is the patient now has had to go to another doctor who had to read these same notes and try to figure out what was done. And this new doctor had to remove everything and start over and then treat the inflammation, which was left by the implant and the betadine-soaked implant for the fluid buildup in there. So she has a long road to recover from because of all this trauma. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah. In regards to the implant, as I understand it, she had an allergy to shellfish, and the implant, when it was reinserted, was soaked in betadine. Is there a contraindication to that?
In all medical literature, it is. Especially, and then it was done twice, taken out in one of the surgeries, rinsed, put back in, and then done it again with the patient having an allergic reaction to shellfish. The patient might have only had a reaction to shellfish, you know, with food as opposed to inner skin or anything, but she's had now surgical procedure with the betadine, then another surgical procedure. So having fluid build up around the implant, and if you look at the x-rays, the implant doesn't look like it's sitting well. There's still fluid around it, but he put the same implant back in. And that I don't understand at all.
As I understand it also, the patient had arthritis?
The patient has really severe arthritis. Dr. Clark was employed by an arthritis company, and he was one of the podiatrists at this arthritis company, which has a whole bunch of high-risk patients. And this patient was being treated by the arthritis center for many years before she saw Dr. Clark.
Okay. That being said, with arthritis, she'd have a lot of aches and pains, and perhaps her bone would be osteoporotic?
Oh, absolutely. This is not a large female. She is osteoporotic. You can see it on her x-rays. You can see the fluid buildup around the implant. The good thing is, with the osteoporosis, the x-rays were more visualized. You can see better right into that joint.
Okay. That's all the questions I have for you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Ulano. Dr. Foreman, did you have something else?
Yeah, I had one more question. With the problems with the documentation, is that with the old system from the arthritis group, or that is his new EHR?
Everything.
Everything, okay.
Everything, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Elaborate a little bit more. He needs more into his dictation. Not once did I see in any of his dictation, did he observe the patient in gait? Did he observe the patient with any range of motions, except for when he said that in movement of the heel, when I reported that. But it's just not complete.
Dr. Polakoff, this is Dr. Campbell. May I ask you a few questions, please?
Yes, doctor.
On the x-ray dated 2/17/2020 and comparing this to the x-ray on 2/3/2020, do you see the space between the implant stem at the metatarsal, area of the metatarsal?
Absolutely. That's what I was referring to. Mm-hmm. And that's why I didn't understand. After that point, he took the patient back to surgery and removed the same implant and rinsed with betadine, put it back in, as opposed to getting a different sizer if it's not fitting correctly.
And with this discussion about, you know, heel pain and plantar fasciitis and tarsal tunnel, do you think there's any connection that this may have, if the patient was complaining of this, that it could have been a compensatory mechanism from having had surgery on one's great toe joint?
Absolutely. Just imagine having four surgeries on that great toe. Even in Dr. Clark's notes, it's 2 weeks after surgery, and the patient is doing very well walking in regular shoes, trying to think of the date where I just saw this. And when I spoke with the patient, she said in those 2 weeks she was home with her foot up. She couldn't do anything, and the only time she came to the office is when she wore a pair of sandals because it's the only thing she could slip on her foot. But the if I was reading just the notes, she's doing fantastically.
Well, thank you, Dr. Polakoff, from your complete report. Thank you so much. Now we'll move on to our complainant, ma'am, and if you would please just summarize in 5 to 10 minutes the case from your perspective. We'd appreciate that.
Yes, I had my original summary to your board. I'll go over that. January 17th of 2020, Dr. Clark performed the surgery on my left big toe. I have the hospital listed. That was doing fine, except there was continued oozing through no apparent open wound. I went back to see Dr. Clark, and he deemed that this is what I was told. It was a ganglion, and I was scheduled for removal on March 11th at another surgery center. After that, there was continued oozing after I healed again, like a fluid buildup. Then Dr. Clark deemed that he needed to have a mesh placed in the joint. This was done at St. Joseph Westgate on April 1st. And after healing, there was continued oozing. Periodically, I would see his partner, Dr. Gillespie. This time, he took an x-ray and said there was a staple loose. And I continued to my fourth surgery on the left big toe on July 14th. After healing, I had an immense amount of fluid over my left toe. At this point, sadly, I decided that 4 chances was enough. The oozing was never addressed. If I understood Dr. Polakoff correctly, he's saying there was some other issues with my foot that I was not aware of. I went to see a different doctor who removed a vial and a half of fluid from above my left toe. I said there was no infection, and he did tell me I would need 2 surgeries to complete making my foot better. And he removed all the hardware that had been done, and then the second surgery he performed was to put in a bone graft. Those 7 months with the 4 surgeries I had, I missed a lot of infusions for my rheumatoid arthritis because you can't have them when you have surgeries and open wounds. And afterwards, I also had to have extensive physical therapy because I had been using my right leg so much, I was limping. Also, you know, I was under anesthesia all those times too. So I had a lot of concerns. I didn't know if anything had been done wrong, but I felt it that I should go to the board and let you guys decide. Yeah, if you have any questions for me, that would be fine.
Thank you very much for your speaking to us. Dr. Ilano or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for our complainant? Okay, hearing none, we will then, thank you so much again. Dr. Clark is present on the phone, and Mr. Crawford is here with us in the conference room. Mr. Crawford, do you want to make a statement first before Dr. Clark does, or vice versa?
Just a couple of very brief comments. Dr. Clark has already provided a supplemental response to the issues that were in the investigation report. Sounds to me like there's some things that have been brought up today that were not in the investigation report, so I'll have to just defer to him to discuss those with you. The financial records, it's hard to comment because Dr. Clark did not have the ability to get those records. He doesn't work at AARA anymore, so we haven't seen whatever financial records you were able to obtain from the patient's insurance. To my knowledge, at least. So, and any subsequent records. So to a certain extent, we don't have everything that probably we would need to respond to everything. But basically, Dr. Clark's here to respond to, you know, your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. Okay, so Dr. Clark, if you would just please summarize your case.
Yes.
Hello?
Be happy to do so. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine. So make sure Okay. Everybody else is on mute, please. Thank you.
Okay. So, yes, in 2019, as Dr. Polo updated, patient had a surgery on her right foot for a first MTP implant that went well. She was very happy with it. She was having symptoms on her left foot towards the end of 2019 and early 2020. She expressed interest in having a similar procedure performed on that foot. X-ray showed degeneration of the joint and that a similar procedure as her right foot would or should at least yield positive results on the left foot. As can be gleaned from the operative reports and the course of things, there after the surgery there was a few fluid accumulation that it was of course concerned for infection. But it also, you know, transilluminated and appeared to be, as it was oozing, it never appeared turbulent. So it appeared to be more of a jelly, like a ganglion cyst fluid. And so as we went in, we, you know, removed all that fluid accumulation. The implant was noted to not maybe seat quite as well as it could in the joint. Now, the implant that was used, it's the Solastic implant that that Wright Medical has. And as I'm sure you guys have all used this multiple times, there's no necessarily drill for it. There's the little devices that you kind of plunge into the area to try to make the stem whole. And so it was noted that that stem hole may have filled with some fibrosis, and that implant was now not seated as well as it had been at the time of surgery. So the implant was removed, soaked in betadine, and that everything was cleaned out of that area so the implant would be able to fit better. Nothing appeared to be allergic as far as the allergy to silicone to the implant. She had done very well on the other side with the exact same materials. So there was really no indication that there should be either a different implant used or that that she was having some sort of allergy to the silicone. I was not aware of any betadine allergy, which, again, her allergy is not to betadine, it's to shellfish, which there actually is a lot of recent research that actually shows that topical or betadine soaks are actually not contraindicated for shellfish allergy either way. But, again, that was information that was not provided to us at the surgery center, which is why it was used. Subsequently, after the revision of that and just kept having drainage problems, I had had a conversation with the patient that, hey, sometimes these implants fail. They may need to be removed and fuse the joint. And I think largely because of the success of the right-sided foot, patient was very hesitant to fuse that joint because, well, they have other side work. This one should too. And so we went ahead and drained it. And then it was later on noted that the staple from the Aiken procedure was loose, so the fourth procedure was really to just remove that staple. As can be gleaned from the notes as well, you know, the patient, as she appeared in the office, yet after one of her surgeries, it could be that she was laid up for 2 weeks and had her foot elevated and only came in a flip-flop. But But there were multiple visits where she came in and said, yeah, it actually feels really good. I'm in a flip-flop. And even though the instructions, and this can be reviewed from the notes, it can be reviewed from all of the post-op instructions that, you know, she was to be non-weight-bearing with the boot, keeping it protected, and she just wasn't doing that. And sometimes that happens as people have a successful one-sided surgery. When they have the left, they may not take it as serious, or the right side, you know, one side goes so well that they don't take the post-op instructions quite as seriously on the opposite side. And so it had been discussed with her after, it would have been after either the second or third procedure, that she likely needed to remove the implant and just fuse the joint. But due to the success of the opposite side the previous year, the patient was very reluctant to do that, and so we tried to save that implant to the best extent possible. You know, some of these, you know, extensive surgeries that are discussed, I think there is a miscommunication, I believe, with the charting. All of that procedure that Dr. Polakoff read off from March 2nd, that's all pertaining to a possible plantar fascia situation, which patient had been having at the time. But that obviously was not our surgical target, really, as related to the implant. So anything heel related was obviously put on hold in favor of the first MTP joint. So I don't feel that the surgical plan was, when you read through the notes, you see that there was a surgical plan at some point for other problems that had arisen. But those surgical plans were always put on the back burner as we were focusing more on that first MTP. And so this is a case where one side surgery went so well, you try to do the other side thing on the other foot, you feel like the procedures perform the same way, you feel like if the postoperative instructions are followed, you know, that we should end up with a similar result, and that unfortunately was not the case. I believe strongly that the patient needed to have the implant removed and fuse the joint, which I believe is what ultimately happened, and I'm glad that she was able to find a surgeon that was able to do that for her. But that's kind of the summary of the care there is, you know, I feel as the implant was placed back in, it was lining up correctly. The fibrosis had been removed, but the stem had been re-drilled to where the stem was fitting. And then she had a great chance to be able to keep that implant and be able to get through these complications that had been happening.
Thank you very much, Dr. Clark. We've heard Dr. Polakoff's investigation report. We've heard from the complainant and heard from Dr. Clark and from Mr. Crawford. Now, all the board members, we've all had the opportunity to review these materials on this file. Based on the investigator's report and the information that's presented in the complaint file, I don't think it's appropriate at this point to waste time for the board members to be asking perfunctory questions of Dr. Clark. There's multiple concerns and questions that need to be addressed, and I think that is beyond the scope of an initial review, which is what this is. And in order for us to do our due diligence, I believe, like I said, it's beyond the scope. I have multiple concerns about the care of this patient, and it's the duty of the board to protect the public and to determine if actions or inactions of a licensee have arisen to the level to necessitate a disciplinary action as a result of a possible violation of a state statute. So, therefore, I am making a motion to move file 21-03-C, Dr. Seth Clark, to an informal interview, citing the following allegations of a possible violation of state statute. 32-854.01 is unprofessional conduct. Specifically, number 21, committing any conduct or practice that is or might be harmful and dangerous to the health of a patient. The examples include but may not be limited to the following findings. Number one, multiple times that povidone iodine was used, including soaking a Swanson double-stemmed double hinge implant into the left first MPJ when there was noted that the patient was allergic to shellfish, actually an anaphylactic reaction. Number two, or the next, multiple exposures to anesthesia in a short period of time from January the 17th of 20 to 7/14 of 20 in a patient who has conditions. Number three, apparent lack of consideration of an allergic reaction of foreign body and sterile abscess and loosening of a joint implant as the cause of continued of 20 joint space between the implant and the first metatarsal, indicating and suggesting the implant is loosening compared to an x-ray taken of 2, 3, 20. Apparent failure to reevaluate for a necessary change of implant. Operative reports indicate implants were removed, cleansed, and baseline and reset.
I don't mean to interrupt, but you're cutting out.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Apparent failure to reevaluate for a necessary change of implant size during the subject. Yeah.
Dr. Campbell, you're still cutting out. Perhaps it needs new batteries.
Okay, we're going to try a different mic. Sorry, guys. Oh, just gave me another one. Okay. Can you hear on this one? Okay, the battery may have been.
Better.
Okay, great. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll start back on that one again, gentlemen. Apparent failure to reevaluate for a necessary change of implant size during the subsequent surgeries. The operative reports indicate implants were removed, cleansed, and betadine and reset. It would have been appropriate to request a sizer kit to be sure the proper sized implant was placed. This could have prevented further issues in subsequent surgeries, particularly since the doctor mentions there was no issues with the right first MPJ implant on 8/23 of 19. This complainant also has osteoarthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, and osteopenia, so the possibility of an implant becoming loose is increased. Next, doctor states he recommended removal of the implant on multiple occasions, but there was no evidence found supporting this statement in the records. The doctor states on 7-1 of 20 that the patient missed appointments, but there is no documentation supporting this statement in the records. There's an apparent lack of discussion with the patient regarding an x-ray of the left ankle that was done at Banner on 3/23 of 20, which indicated a non-displaced oblique fracture at the distal fibular metaphysis. There was no indication of a treatment plan for this fracture or evidence of subsequent x-rays to assess the healing of such fracture. On 3/11 of 20, the surgery, it was noted that the left first MPJ implant was loosened from the stem locations. Again, the implant was removed, soaked in betadine, borders freshed up, and the implant was replanted. On 7/14 of 20, a chylectomy was performed, but there is no description as to if the implant was removed prior to performing the chylectomy or left in place while the chylectomy was performed, lending to the possibility of damaging the implant. Dr. Jensen's operative report of 8/20/25/20 notes that the implant was loose within the proximal phalanx base and the first metatarsal. There were also small pockets of fluid and inflammatory tissue, but it could not be completely ruled out as to an abscess or a foreign body type reaction. There were also two small ulcers found that were connected directly to the implant of the first MPJ. Do I have a second on my motion? Gentlemen?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion on
second.
This motion? Any discussion, please?
Yes, I'd like to see the Dr. Clark said there was literature in regards to soaking and replanting the implant.
Okay, that's
using betadine.
Okay, that's something that we can certainly that type of information he can present at the informal. So we is there any other discussion?
Sure.
Any other discussion? Okay, it's time for a vote, and I will do it via roll call. Dr. Yolano?
Aye.
Dr. Foreman?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Aye. So moved. All right, though this will, Dr. Clark, I will strongly urge you that this is an in-person meeting, interview. That way, this can be complete, efficient, and a substantial informal interview can be achieved so we can adjudicate. And Mr. Alvarado will keep all parties informed as to the date and the time of the informal interview and the process therein. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care. Thanks for waiting on us.
Oh, certainly. All right. Is Dr. Andrews available, Bob? We can move on to that. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, board members, we have a couple applications here for registration to dispense drugs and devices. That's C under 5. First is Michael Hamm. Now, we just saw him here having his license issued, and he had, with already having the temporary license in place, and we voted here on his regular license, or he's by Universal. So hang on a second here. Let me get my... So everything is in place here for Dr. Hamm. Does anyone have any questions regarding that? Okay. So I will make a motion to approve the initial application for initial registration application for dispensing drugs and devices, and issue the license, the registration license upon payment of the fee. Second. A second.
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman.
You.
So, any discussion? Okay, hearing none. We'll vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. And then next is Dr. Angela Zhang. Everything, I believe, is in place here for her application for registration to dispense. Anyone have any questions or concerns there? Hearing none, let's take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Thank you. And just as a reminder to everyone on the board, on September 29th, our new statute will take effect, and that's where we combine the application for initial licensor along with the initial registration to dispense. So then that'll just make things more efficient and fluid. So this is kind of the last of the group of, you know, having to wait a month after you've gotten your, your licensing. So, all righty. Okay, yes. That comes in the, the Senate Bill 1284 is in there. So is he there yet, Bo? Yes, we did both of them. Yes. Okay, well, then let's go on to our renewals, which is subheading D. First is Dr. Lewis Geller. Dr. Geller practices out of state. He did indicate on his application that he was involved in a malpractice case, but typically, we would open a complaint. But this was this case took place in his home state and was dealt with there, so it's actually out of our purview. So I believe everything else is in good shape in his application. Does anyone have any questions or concerns there?
No.
Okay. So, hearing none, I will move to approve Dr. Geller's renewal application, and as it is complete, and he's paid his fees, so we will issue his license. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. The next is Dr. Paul Ledesma. And Dr. Ledesma has applied for his renewal. He did indicate a malpractice claim on his and on this reapplication. Does anyone have any questions or concerns with his application? Okay. Hearing none, I will make a motion to approve Dr. Ledesma's renewal application for licensure. Fees are paid, and to issue his renewed license.
Second it.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. Since the next motion for Dr. Ledesma is I'll make a motion to open a board complaint in regards to the pending litigation and to stay the complaint until the conclusion of the litigation.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next is Dr. Chad Thompson. Dr. Thompson has a complete application and also noted a malpractice case. Does anyone have questions or concerns on this application? Okay, hearing none, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Thompson's renewal application as it is complete, and to issue the renewal as the fee is paid.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. I will then make a motion to open a board complaint regarding the malpractice issue and to stay the complaint until the litigation outcome is complete.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 All righty. Our next is Dr. Amelia Harris. Dr. Harris is practicing, is living in Poland, so she has requested a deferral on her CMEs. And this is certainly, that goes right along with the criteria for requesting a waiver. So I will make two motions here. Does anybody have any questions or concerns on this situation? License here?
Well, if I do. If she's not practicing in Arizona, we can make a motion that once she comes back and starts practicing, she has to fulfill the CME.
No.
Is that correct?
No, you can't do that. No. Uh-uh.
Okay.
No, you can't. Yeah. So, because, you know, that's on a yearly. So the reason she gets an exemption is because she lives out, you know, lives in another country. So, but thanks for the question. So I will make a motion to accept Dr. Harris's renewal application for licensure as it's complete and to issue the license for her. She's maintaining.
Seconded.
Yep, second. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. And also I will make a motion to grant a waiver of the CMEs as Dr. Harris meets the criteria for such request.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All right. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you very much. So I've heard a lot of wrestling going on. So is Dr. Andrews there? Dr. Andrews, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, thank you so much. We've had a kind of an interesting morning here with things changing around. This Dr. Campbell, I certainly appreciate the letter that you presented as we move forward with this. Let me just grab it so I have it in front of me so I can speak intelligently. Because one of my questions to you on, you know, proceeding now with our, with this process as the, that change in our statutes becomes effective September 29th. So we're kind of progressing okay. right along where we should be. And one of my comments to you and to the State Association, which was something that I was interested to ask you about, and what I see that you have done, was that the fact that you did survey association members to see, and I guess you gave, hope you, if you gave them a comment period or what you did in order to gain and see what their support of this coursework through the American Association of Podiatric Medical Assistants.
Yeah, we did. And then really with the board of directors, we just had a meeting last month and then talked about the pathways, at least the both of them actually, but especially the one that did with the American Society of Podiatric Medical Assistants. Yeah. So we did ask, and actually we did form a radiology committee. Dr. Discon has been helping out also, and he's here today to help move forward with that. So.
Great. Yeah, and one of the reasons I think that I'd like to express why that is an important aspect of this is, so when we go to DHS, to that special licensing board, to ask for an exemption because of the, you know, the radiology exam issue, that we need to have all our ducks in a row and be able to show them that we've done our due diligence in study, you know, in having every piece of fact that we can to go with these people too. Because one of the other things that I think is important that we do here too, Dr. Andrews, is request, which, you know, I can do it or we can do it together as a thing coming from both the State Association and the board. I don't know if that's, you know, we'll find out if that's the most appropriate way to do it. But to write to the ASPMA to see if we can get a copy of both the examination for the medical assisting plus the radiology. That way, again, that's something we can present to DHS, showing them what a good examination it is, because we need obviously a reproducible quality examination. It just, you know, just gives us more, you know, backbone and fact to present to them. I know the APMA has given their seal of approval on the program, but I just think that if we have those tests available to present, if asked, you know, we've got the information there. And the other thing I think would be important to do is get the the exam that was given between, let's see, it was 1981 and 2018, the one that Miss Mary Margaret Hunkel, you know, that exam that was created between her and the state board at that time. If there's some way we can have a copy of that and have that to show comparison as to the program through the American Society of Podiatric Medical Assistants, that just again, like I said, shows that this is a good program, that, like I said, a reliable exam that's defensible.
Madam Chairman, this is Dr. Alan Discount. May I say something?
Sure. Thanks for being present.
Thank you. I would think that the examination from Ms. Hunkel might be obtainable, but I don't know if the ones from the state are obtainable, in the thought that they would not want it reproduced and lose their viability using it at a later time, that the questions would be out there and shared. I can do due diligence and speak with Mary. I know that she has a practice examination that candidates have taken in the past. The ASPMA National, they have 135 question examination. Once again, I don't know that they would release their examination, but maybe they have a practice exam practical that I may be able to.
Okay, you're correct in that. And I know, you know, that's something obviously that, you know, for being a member of the National Board of Podiatric Medical Examiners, we're very, we're protective of of questions and stuff. So that's, if we could, a practice exam. I was just trying to think of ways, you know, and that's why we have these discussions, and to find out what is the best way to arm ourselves to be able to get this exemption.
Yeah, we're only going to be able to get practice questions. This is Dr. Foreman. We're only going to be able to get practice questions. No one's going to release the actual test for those reasons.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think that the outline of their program does show that they do have a 135-question certifying exam, and the format on leading to that exam, both practical, didactic, and in-office observation, the format. Don't know if the outline would be helpful for them as well, but we can provide all that to you. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, because I, and Dr. Discount, I have all, you know, we have all that information from when I had first sent it to Dr. Andrews and when you all were here live, and we all have, you have copies of that. Okay. All righty.
Is there anything else our committee can do to help?
Well, that's what I, you know, yeah, that, you know, and it, like I said, it may that we, you know, that we each have end up having to write a letter to, you know, DHS in support of this coming from, you know, both of, you know, both entities, as we are really the stakeholders in this situation. So, and I don't know, we have to find out who we need to locate a direct contract or a contact with a DHS special licensing, if that's something Mr. Abadi might know.
No, I imagine there is a separate. This is Joe.
Oh, hi, Joe. I didn't hear you there. Hi.
Yeah, hi. No, I just was listening. No, I think that we would want to work with the radiology board under the DHS. I think they kind of have autonomous control over their own operation, and even though they're under DHS. Obviously, when the time comes, I have some contacts, you know, the deputy director of DHS has worked with a lot of us over the years, and Colby Bauer, and he's been very cooperative on a lot of variety of subjects, a variety of my clients and others. And so simultaneously, as we approach the board, you know, I certainly would make contact with Colby, but also, you know, work with you in any way possible. I think the board has to be the front person because we are talking about getting exemption and allowing the board to have autonomy and under this jurisdiction, under this area, radiology. But I think the association would go hand in glove in working with you, with the DHS, and with any other government agencies to get this thing done. Obviously, we all recognize the importance of getting this exemption.
Right.
So we're here to help the board in any which way we can. And but keeping in mind, you know, the association and the board working together, coming up with a credible program, which you already started doing. And it sounds like it will be a very credible program. That's that would be very helpful. I think also, I may suggest that to have the licensing board check with the DOs and MDs and the naturopaths and the chiropractors, and those are the groups that originally got the medical assistance in their statute. And as I mentioned to you before, I was representing a couple of other clients. The podiatry was not one of them at the time, and podiatry at the time decided not to participate in this legislation that provided for these medical assistant rules in our statutes in the very end.
Well, that's what, Joe, that's what we did in the statute, you know, in SB 1284, is we have the definition for, you know, pediatric medical assistance, and we had researched all the boards, and that's how, you know, when we got our definition, You know, so we also now have to change.
And then we use the same definition of, and was a good one, because most of the other boards have used that in the original language, and it kept it broad enough to give you the leeway to do what you needed to do, and that's good. I think the statute is sufficient, hopefully, bearing the problem statutorily. Now it's just working, as you say, working with DHS and working within profession and you all to come up with a great program to present to DHS. So we're here to help, and anything I can do, just let me know.
Okay, great. You know, it's good to have our ongoing discussions here. So, Dr. Foreman, Dr. Yolanda, do you have any comments or questions?
I think we just need to get all of our ducks in a row, and I agree with maybe getting some sample questions from that test, but I think 1284 pretty much sets us up to go to DHS and ask for the exemption.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And Madam Chairman, may I ask?
Pardon me?
May I ask, Dr. Allen, just kind of fun to ask a question? Maybe that Joe Boddy would know also.
Dr. Discount, could you hold on just a second? I'm getting a lot of back noise, so if other people who are on the line and you're not speaking, please mute so that we can hear Dr. Discount clearly. Thank you. Go ahead, Dr. Discount. Hello? Oh, geez.
Hello?
Madam Chairman?
Yes, who's there?
Yes, it's Joe. It's Joe Abadi again. I think it would be helpful, just finishing up my thoughts, is to have you all make contact with the DOs and MD boards and others, naturopathic board, to see if after the very law, have they had problems with DHS or if they've had smooth sailing, getting the exemption, and what their current status is with DHS. I think that would be helpful for a review of that, just as a thought. Just be prepared for any, you know, kind of potential problems down the line that these other boards have encountered dealing with DHS.
Okay. I'll probably be calling you, Mr. Abadi.
Sure.
Just so that we can make sure we are doing this as well as we can and make sure we're doing it in the proper way. So, okay. Dr.
No
Discount,
problem.
Did you get back on? We all of a sudden lost people for some reason. Dr. Foreman, are you there? Or Dr. Yolano?
Dr. Foreman's here.
Okay, because somehow we lost Dr. Discount.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi there, Albert. Okay, so Dr. Discount, are you there? He had another question. He fell off. Hang on a second. I'll send him a... Okay, because I hate to not hear what Dr. Discount's comment or question was.
I'll text him.
Yeah, text him and ask him to call back in. Thanks there, Dr. Foreman. Dr. Discount?
We're sorry.
Hey, we lost you. Yeah. Okay, thanks. So your question, your question?
My question was, is there and maybe Joe or whomever, is there a standard protocol for requesting an exemption to the medical boards? I didn't know if there was a standard protocol, forms to fill out, that type of situation.
This is Joe Abadi. I'm not aware of any particular protocol, but that's in line with the comments I just recently made about checking with the other boards to see what problems they've had over the years and when they formally got their exemption after the statutes had statute that passed back in the late 80s. And so there must be a history with a lot of these boards dealing with the radiology board. So a little fact-finding would be helpful to the licensing board to talk from one licensing board to another to see what the situation has been. And that gets to your question about any protocols and experiences these other boards have had in their relationship with the radiology board.
Thank you.
All right. So thanks, everybody, for being on the call. I think we can, we're in a good place, and we'll just keep moving on with the process and keep in touch with one another. And if you have anything that pops up that is you believe is important, please contact us, and likewise.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time. All right.
Thank you for having us on. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. Great.
And we'll forward some questions when we get them from the other organizations to the board.
Yeah.
And get some sample questions.
Great. Sounds perfect. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Yes, we'll move on to 5E. We have board elections. Now that Mr. Rhodes is no longer with us, we have the secretary treasurer position to fill. So if either of my board members are interested, or we can go without one too. You know, that's, you know, it's not that it, it's more of a formality, I guess I can say. It's in our statutes, but we don't have to do it. There really isn't a lot that the secretary actually does, would do because of the way the board is set up as far as finances and things. You know, we all review a budget, you know, when that's presented to us, but all in all, that basically that kind of stuff is out of our hands. So
I'll take it this year.
Okay. So if you are interested, so Dr. Foreman, I will make a motion to nominate Dr. Mark Foreman to fill the position of secretary of the State Board of Podiatry Examiners.
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Ulano. So, Dr. Foreman, you must recuse yourself.
I will recuse myself.
Okay. So, pardon? Oh, we can't. That's right. We don't have a quorum. That's right. I will rescind my motion, and the position will remain empty until we have a public member, and then we would have quorum. So thank you for your interest, Dr. Foreman. But that,
you're welcome.
So that point is moot. All righty. So let's progress on, gentlemen. We have legislative updates for the 2020 session. Oh. Oh, I'm pardon me. That's my, that was a conversation we had with Dr. Andrews and Mr. Abadi and Dr. Discount. So, pardon me. Now, then we'll have our executive director's report, number 7 here with Bo.
Okay, so we did go ahead and update the budget on the website for the FY23. So if you need to see that, that's available for you on our podiatry budget website. Section B there, we wanted to try to remove the paper applications, and I just wanted to get the board members' thoughts on how we can do that or how we can start working towards that for next year. We're coming towards the end of our renewals. So we got a little bit out there that are still, getting stuff in, but we wanted to try to avoid for future references them having the ability to go to the website, print out an application, and then submit it, using through the snail mail, if you want to put it that way. Our complaint log has been updated, as well as with what we have today. We'll go ahead and add those. And then our e-licensing, that kind of goes back to the same question of being able to go ahead and do everything on Salesforce rather than having to send stuff in. And that's what I got for you guys. I just wanted to know what you guys' thoughts on that. Basically, just kind of moving into paperless, you know, removing the application from the website, and then as well, just moving the e-licensing where everything is online.
Yeah, I know we've go ahead there, Dr. Foreman. Hello?
Oh, I wasn't good. I was waiting for you.
Pardon me?
I'm for doing it online.
Okay. Yeah, because, you know, we can always, you know, we've had this discussion in the past and had always decided just to leave a paper one there just in case we had somebody who wasn't electronically proficient. But, I mean, we always have a paper copy, and if something had to be scanned or copied and mailed out to somebody that requested one, we can do that.
Yeah, I would do per request. So anybody that did need to or wasn't comfortable, we can always supply that paper application if needed.
So Seamus, do we have to make a motion, or can that just be that's a decision we make and just direct Bo to do that? We don't have to do anything. Okay, so if everybody's in agreement, yep, more efficiency is good.
Thank you, guys.
And concerning the complaint log, so we added two today that were related to malpractice, but those are stayed. So, Bo, since the last meeting, do you know how many new complaints we've had?
I believe we added seven.
And those were some of those new ones were the board complaints for the malpractice stuff.
Correct.
And do you and so we've had have we had any complaints from patients?
Yes, we've had six complaints.
Okay. All right. So we'll be busy, and we've got obviously we have Dr. Polakoff, Dr. Steck, Dr. Saunders, and Dr. Farhani. So we have four investigators, so we should be able to keep up on our not get behind on things. So, okay. Anybody else have any comments or questions for Bo? All righty. Next is our summary of current events. Anything in that department? No. And then we have the legislative updates on the different bills here. That's a holdover from okay, so that. Oh, okay. So did you guys? Oh, okay. So we'll be getting a summary memo from Seamus's office regarding those legislative updates. So next, 10 is call to the public. I'll make a call, but we have no one left in the audience. Does anyone have anything this is number 11, for anything you want discussed or on a future meeting agenda? All right, if you ever, you know, think of something that you believe needs to be discussed, then let Bo know, and then that can be a agenda item. Our next meeting is October the 13th, 2021, and it is now time for adjournment. If seeing that all board business materials have been completed, I will make a motion to adjourn the meeting at 10 a.m. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thanks for your thanks, everybody, and have a good day. We'll talk later. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Is that someone breathing in there?